This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Studies in recent years have shown that there is a racial bias against people of color, or perception that someone is not white, in rental housing, in academia, and in other areas. A new study conducted by researchers at the University of Vermont now shows there's a disturbing prevalence of racial bias in mental health services as well. Here to talk about what this study found is Lance Smith, associate professor in counseling at the university and the study's lead researcher. Lance, welcome to the program.
It is a pleasure to have this conversation with you today, Jane. Thanks.
I understand to do this study, you had an actor call and leave a voicemail at the offices of mental health counselors and psychologists saying she was seeking services. In some cases, she said her name was Allison. In others, she said her name was Lakeisha. And you chose those two names because of their perceived association with people of specific races?
That is correct. We pulled randomly phone numbers from a number of therapists on an internet database, and then we had our actor record a message, and we left this message on their voice boxes, and everything about the message for every therapist was exactly the same. It was the same voice, it was the same person, and they were asking for the same services. Basically, it was, I need counseling, and will you give me a call back? The only difference was for half of the therapists, the person in the message identified as Allison, and for the other half, the person identified as Lakeisha.
And the idea here was that the therapists might associate Allison with somebody who was white. Obviously, they couldn't see her, and they might associate Lakeisha as a name more closely associated with black people.
Exactly. It's been pretty well documented that Allison is a very popular name for women and girls and families that identify as white, and Lakeisha is a popular name for women and girls and families that identify as black or African American.
And what did you find about the response rate?
Yeah, I wanted to ask you that, Jane. What do you think we found?
Well, I've read the summary, so I know that what was interesting was that on first blush, the response rate was very similar, whether it was Allison or Lakeisha, but you dug deeper than that.
Yeah. So I'm going to complicate this a little bit. I don't know about your listeners, but it's not easy. It's not always easy to call a therapist and to find a therapist who will actually invite you into their door, right? So when we're making phone calls to therapists and we're leaving voicemails, there are two things that need to happen in order for us to have access to services. One, the therapist needs to call us back. And then two, the therapist needs to communicate that they have an open schedule and let's talk about some time in the future when we might be able to go in and see them. So what we noticed is that with regards to that first step, actually receiving a phone call back, Allison did receive more return phone calls than Lakeisha did. And then when we added the other condition of not only do we need to receive a phone call, but we also need to hear a message asking Allison and or Lakeisha to follow up or inviting Allison or Lakeisha to their offices for an appointment, we noticed that Lakeisha was more likely to receive a message to the extent of, I'm sorry, I wish I could take you, but my caseload is full. So when we were thinking about what are responses that promote services and what are responses that impede services, what we found was a statistically significant relationship around bias in that Lakeisha was more likely to have responses that impeded services than was Allison.
Because one of the things I didn't realize was that therapists and providers are supposed to call you back. So they should be calling back at the very least. And then the question was, what did they say? Did they offer services or did they say, you know, my practice is all full?
Yeah, one of the more surprising findings of our study is therapists have an ethical mandate to return phone calls to potential clients. And we found that many therapists didn't even call our clients back. As a matter of fact, there's another researcher out of Princeton who, unbeknownst to us, was conducting a similar study at virtually the same time. Her study came out this summer. Ours came out this fall. And she also found, to her surprise, that there were many, many therapists who didn't call clients back at all. But moreover, she had her study had similar results to ours in that the white middle class clients or actors in her study were twice as likely to receive services than were people in her study that identified as Black and middle class.
I'm talking with Lance Smith. He's an associate professor in counseling at the University of Vermont and the co-lead investigator on a new study showing racial bias among mental health care providers. Professor Smith, did you screen for or have any way of measuring the race of the provider?
Yeah, that is a very good question. And no, we did not. And that was primarily out of ethical concerns for our participants. We in no way wanted our participants to be able to be identified. But at the same time, we weren't and are not necessarily concerned about the racial identity of the provider because we are looking at a larger system, right? We're looking at how counselors en masse may or may not contribute to this disparity in mental health access. This is similar to a study that was conducted years ago. Some of your listeners may be familiar with this, where researchers responded to 5,000 want ads in Chicago and Boston, and they sent multiple resumes to each want ad, and the resumes were exactly the same in terms of education, in terms of experience. The only difference was the name at the top of the resume. Was it Greg or was it Jamal? Was it Allison or was it Lakeisha? And what they found was that resumes with a white-sounding name received a 50% higher callback. So in that study as well, they were not able to ascertain the racial identity of the human resource officer or whoever it was that reviewed those resumes, but what they could see, as we did find, was that there's a systemic discussion that needs to be had around racial bias.
Well, yeah, I mean, given that other studies in different arenas, whether it's housing or jobs or academia, have found similar racial biases, you know, perhaps it's sadly not a surprise to see a racial bias here, but what now? What do you want to happen for mental health care providers to do with this information?
Yeah, that might be the most important question of our phone call today. You know, the first thing we need to do is we need to have a discussion about racism, and we need to move away from this really dominant idea in our society that one is either racist, which we think of a mean-spirited, overtly KKK card-carrying bigot, right? One's either a racist or one is a good, beneficent, well-intended person and therefore not racist. And I would submit that most counselors and therapists and psychologists are very beneficent, well-meaning, well-intended people. The conversation we need to have is not if we are racist or not, but a conversation around how much bias has been downloaded into our software, because most of us have bias that's been downloaded into our lived software. And I'm not pointing my fingers at anyone in our study who perhaps did not call Lakeisha back or did not offer her services, because, Jane, that could have been me. I have implicit bias downloaded into my software as well. So we need to have this conversation. We also need to expand our research on implicit bias, specifically how to interrupt implicit bias. And some of the best research that we have speaks to the power of authentic and genuine relationships, interracial relationships, relationships with people that identify from a different cultural or racial background than I do. And when I mean authentic, I don't mean the token relationship. Yeah, I've got a Black friend on my fantasy football team. Relationships where we know what their dinner table is like. They know what our dinner table is like. We laugh together. We cry together. We share stories about our kids together. If there's anything that is remotely promising about implicit racial bias, it's the development of genuine and authentic relationships.
Lance Smith is associate professor in counseling at the University of Vermont, and he was the co-lead researcher on a new study showing racial bias among mental health care providers against offering services to patients they may have perceived as Black. Lance Smith, thank you very much for talking with us about your study. I appreciate it.
Yes, and thank you for having us on.